This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's coming up to 7:49 in the morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with Keith and Shazana. Now, the National Credit Counseling and Management Agency, also known as AKPK, recently reported that 53,000 youths aged 30 and below have debt worth nearly 1.9 billion ringgit in total. Many of these youth have been turning to AKPK for debt restructuring assistance in the hopes of restoring their cash flow.
According to AKPK, the highest proportion of applicants are aged between 28 and 30, making 65% of the total number of the agency's clients as of March. The report also added that credit card debts were AKPK's most restructured credit facilities, involving 47% of those registered under the agency, and this is followed by personal loans, which made up 40%, vehicle hire purchase loans 3%, mortgages 2%, and others at 8%.
So with all this debt, the question arises is how can young borrowers better manage their finances so as to help achieve their goals? And is there enough policy measures to support that kind of financial literacy and awareness in our society? For some thoughts on this, we have on the line with us Rajan Devadasan, licensed financial planner. Rajan, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us today. So let's start off with getting your reactions to the news that AKPK reported around 53,000 youths aged 30 and below are under debt worth nearly 2 billion ringgit. I mean, how concerned should we be about this figure?
Hi, Shaz. Hi, Keith. How are both of you?
Excellent.
We're great.
Okay. Now, to dive straight in and to answer the question, if you look at the 1.9 billion raw number, the aggregate number, and then you consider that we're talking about 53,000 young adults who are 30 years or under who are basically dealing with this, then a straightforward analysis shows that or suggests that, you know, it's really not that bad because it comes to about just under 36,000 ringgit per person. So if you look purely through that metric, then it's not that bad because even if someone is only earning 3,000 ringgit per month, then in terms of annual gross income, it's about 1 year problem. However, the real issue, of course, is that I think it is evident that the per capita debt levels, not just for young adults, but for people in general, per capita debt levels are rising every day. And I have some fairly specific thoughts about why it is. I think this has been going on for a very, very long time. I do have to say that I think the work that AKPK is doing is outstanding. I remember this agency of Bank Negara was set up by then-Governor Tan Sri Zetty. And more than a decade ago, I was reached out to by Akwal Sultan, who was then CEO. And he hired me to speak to all of their debt counselors, the debt restructuring managers, on holistic financial planning, because they were looking at things specifically through the narrow lens of restructuring debt. And it was useful to know more. So same thing, if we take basically a broader view, in my opinion, I think young Malaysians and Malaysians in general are becoming more and more indebted for two reasons. Number one, there is a comprehensive lack of financial literacy programs in our schools, in our universities. Thankfully, both now and actually for a very long time, the Financial Planning Association of Malaysia has actually got its own dedicated financial literacy department. So FPAM is trying to work on it. And I do know that my fellow financial planners and I are occasionally invited to speak at schools and at tertiary institutions about financial literacy. But I get the impression we're just scratching the surface. A lot more needs to be done. So that's number one. Number two is, and this is more broad-based, I honestly believe there has been an extensive failure in the Malaysian public education system to hone critical thinking skills in our children, that's number one, and also to give, frankly, everybody in the country fluency in English. This is the international language of business. And if you have critical thinking skills and if you are fluent in English, both those attributes automatically lead to better paying jobs. And ultimately, we're looking at cash flow management, we're looking at budgeting. And if people are feeling the pressure of rising inflation, then And if their income is limited, then the only way they can cover the gap would be to either sell assets, assuming you have assets, or what's more likely, just take advantage of debt instruments, which is one of the reasons why credit card debt is on the rise. Does that help?
Yeah. Rajan, I was just going back to what you said just now. Yes, lack of financial literacy programs, a failure to hold critical thinking as well as English fluency. But you also said that a lot more needs to be done. And my question is, by whom?
Very good point. Thanks, Keith. Okay, I've been thinking about it because you guys gave me a little bit of a head start. I think there are three steps that can actually be done. And I think some of them stem from what was done earlier. Now, I've been around long enough to be able to remember when our current Prime Minister, Anwar Ibrahim, was Finance Minister of Malaysia in the early 1990s. Now, when I talk about credit card debt, I'm not doing so from an ivory tower perspective. I'm a very slow learner and I make plenty of mistakes. And I got into credit card debt not just once in one country, but actually twice in two countries. So I do know about this. And it's a very visceral reaction when I talk about it, when I think about it. I got in trouble with credit card debt in the 1980s in the UK. It took me years to clear everything, but I did. And then to celebrate that, I got into trouble for a shorter period with credit card debt in Malaysia in the 1990s, which is why I remember this. When Anwar was finance minister in the early 90s, he actually changed the minimum monthly repayments on unpaid credit card balances from 5% to 15%. That was a mega jump. And it immediately forced not those who were in trouble, but those of us, I include myself, who were paying the bare minimum, we were forced to triple our payments to increase our payments. Mm. Now, obviously, number one, that caused massive stress. Number two, that led to lower disposable income to spend elsewhere. But it did mean that we saw light at the end of the tunnel so much earlier. There is another issue, of course, and I think here the regulators, specifically Bank Negara, can look into this. I remember that when I first came back from England after studying and working in the late 80s and then starting work in the early 90s, that the minimum required aggregate salary to qualify for a credit card was 24,000. Mm. I checked on this yesterday, and it is still 24,000. And I think that is ludicrously low. Mm. I mean, honestly, it's been 30, 35 years and they're using exactly the same metric and hardly anyone can survive on 2,000 ringgit per month.
Okay,
so it's a real problem.
It is a real problem. I'm wondering, we're talking about the need for individuals to be more literate, but do you think that there's also a role for industry to not take advantage of an ignorant populace when it comes to financial matters?
I do. You see, the reality today is very different from the reality before, going back decades. Think about it. Every single one of us has a chip-enabled ATM card, which is effectively a debit card. And for those who are in trouble with credit cards or who reckon they might be, using a debit card might be wiser. So from an industrial perspective, if incentives can be given to use your debit card instead of your credit card, I think that would help. Also, I honestly think the authorities need to raise the minimum annual income required to qualify for a credit card from the ludicrously low 24,000 ringgit per year to maybe 50,000 ringgit per year. And that will keep many low earners from long-term credit card grief. But the thing that really bugs me is actually these BNPL programs, you know, buy now, pay later.
Right.
Yeah, you think about it. I remember when the announcement came out and they were saying, yes, it gives people lots of flexibility. And I immediately, I think I was with a group of people and I said, this is going to cause such problems. Now, if you think about it, a BNPL scheme, buy now, pay later, is effectively a loan that is offered to customers at the point of sale to buy on credit without the use of a credit card or a debit card. I sincerely believe it is a bad, bad product and is going to cause great damage to many people.
Rajan, thank you very much for speaking to us. That was Rajan Devadasan, licensed financial planner, commenting on recent data that we're seeing from the AKPK about a youth debt, and really some of the factors that need to be considered if we do want to tackle the trend of increasing debt among the youth, what needs to be done. He spoke a lot about different structural as well as really attitudinal shifts that need to be made.
But really, looking at that news, which I saw a couple of days ago, I think it was the front page of Utusan at that time, and the one thing that screamed at me was the fact that these people are not financially literate, which is something that Rajan had alluded to as well.
All right. We'll be following news on this for sure. It's 7:59 in the morning. We're going to head into the 8 a.m. news bulletin, but first, a quick message. Are you looking to take your brand to the next level and inspire future marketeers? Seize this opportunity to immerse yourself in the ultimate brand building experience.
Early bird tickets end on the 26th of April, so don't miss out and head over to bfm.my/brandfest for more information.
And this is, of course, referring to the 19th BFM Brandfest happening at the 3rd and 4th of July at the CCEC at the Vertical Bangsar South City. After the 8 a.m. news bulletin, we have the Breakfast Grill. Keith Kam speaks to Chuni Wang, founder and CEO of QES Group. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.